Templeton led the four men to within a half a mile of Caro de Bancada, Humboldt Puddle's ranch.
We gonna do the same thing we did with Buttram? Poison his well, tear up his garden?
I doubt Puddle even has a garden, and his well isn't an open well. Besides which, we aren't gonna waste time trying to talk him into selling out.
Well, what are we gonna do?
You're gonna kill him, Nixon.
Kill him?
Do you have a problem with that?
I don't have a problem. But for killing, I get a little more money.
Don't worry. I'll get all of you a bonus.
What kind of bonus?
$100 apiece.
What are we waiting around here for? Come on, boys. What do you say we do some killing?
Templeton watched the four men ride off, then returned to Long Track. Smoke was riding at the southern end of his ranch.
Yeah!
Smoke could see gun smoke floating over the scene, and as he rode closer, he saw his neighbor Humboldt Puddle lying behind a fence, besieged by an unknown number of gunmen. Smoke didn't know the reason for the gunfight, but he did know his neighbor, and he could see he was outgunned. That was all Smoke needed. Out of range at the moment, he fired at the assailants just to let them know Puddle was no longer alone. The gunmen, seeing Smoke approach, turned their attention toward him, and three of the mounted gunmen rode toward him. Smoke raised his rifle. Two of the saddles were emptied. The other rider turned and galloped away. Smoke decided not to give chase, instead hurrying to check on his neighbor. Puddle sat on the ground, leaning back against the fence of his corral. The rifle he'd been using was on the ground beside him, and he was holding his hands over his belly. Smoke could see the blood spilling through his fingers.
Mr. Puddle.
Hello, neighbor. I got one of them. Thanks for giving a hand.
Who were they? Did you recognize them?
No, I never got a close enough look to see, but I don't need to. I know who they are. They work for the Frenchman, just as sure as a gun is iron.
I better get your wagon hooked up so we can take you in to see Doc Urban.
Don't waste your time, Smoke. You and I both know there ain't nothing a doctor can do for this. Oh, that sure is a dandy of a wound, ain't it? You know what we used to say about wounds like this during the war?
What's that?
We used to say a deep belly wound was God's way of telling you to slow down. Smoke, I need you to promise me something.
Whatever it is, I'll do it if I can.
Go into my kitchen. In the cupboard under the butter dome, you'll find an envelope. It's got my will in it and the address of my nephew, Malcolm Puddle. He lives in New York. He's my brother's son and the only relative I got. I aim to leave this place to him. Will you promise me you'll get that to him?
I promise.
I'll be gone, so there won't be much I got to say about it one way or the other. But I'm hoping Malcolm will consider hanging on to the place. And I'm hoping that if he does, maybe you'll give him a hand.
You can count on it.
You reckon that once I get to the other side, I'll run into them fellas I killed during the war? Far as I know, they was good men. All of them. He just happened to be wearing a different color uniform than I was, is all. I'd like to run into them. Tell them there wasn't nothing personal in it. I hope they ain't holding no grudge against me.
I'm sure they aren't.
Puddle never heard Smoke's response.
Puddle's dead.
Good. You're sure it can't be traced back to me?
I don't know.
You don't know? What do you mean you don't know?
Three of our men were killed. Nixon, Curtis, and Noble. Sheriff Carson might be able to trace them back to you.
How? What is there to connect them to me?
Well, nothing, I guess. Unless you claim the bodies.
Why would I do that?
No reason, I guess.
Monsieur Templeton, I have led men in times of war. I have lost men in times of war. As a leader, you cannot dwell upon the individuals under your command. You command an army. You do not command individuals. Losses are to be expected in battle, And when they occur, you simply move on. Those three men...
Nixon, Curtis...
I don't care to hear their names again. They accomplished their purpose. That is all I need to know.
Yes, sir. If you look at it like that, I guess you have a point.
I shall go into town and meet with Monsieur Perkins. It would appear that Caro de Bancada has come on the market, and I intend to buy it.
Do you want me to ride into town with you, Colonel?
You may, if you wish.
Oh, I'm afraid there is an assessment due on this ranch, and this can't be probated until the taxes are paid.
Don Pratt was the probate clerk for Big Rock.
How much is the assessment?
$200.
All right. I'll pay it.
If you pay it, ownership of the property will pass to you.
I don't want ownership to pass to me. I want it to pass to Mr. Puddle's nephew, Malcolm Puddle.
Then Malcolm Puddle will have to pay the assessment.
Can I pay it in his name?
If you have his power of attorney.
All right. I'll get his power of attorney.
I don't think you'll have time to do that. The money has to be paid by the end of next week. There isn't time for him to mail you his power of attorney.
Let me see what I can do. If I can't get his power of attorney here on time, I'll pay the assessment and take possession of the land. Then I'll figure out how to transfer it to him.
Very well. But remember, you have only 8 days. No, 6, actually. The last day of the month is on Sunday, which means the taxes will have to be paid by Friday.
One block away from the courthouse where Smoke was attempting to probate the will, Lucien Garneau and Templeton were in the land office.
Yes, sir, Colonel. How is my most valued client this afternoon?
Monsieur Perkins, I understand Monsieur Puddle met with a tragic accident today. Caro de Bancada may be available for purchase, and if it is, I wish to buy it.
Oh, heavens. I haven't heard anything about an accident. What happened?
From what I understand, a group of outlaws may have come by his place in an attempt to rob him. Monsieur Podol fought them bravely, but was killed in defense of his land.
That's a shame. Puddle was a good man.
And he was my neighbor. After I buy his land, I shall put a plaque on the property in his honor.
Oh, well, I'm sure he would appreciate that.
Perkins got out his land chart book. Opening the book, he went through the pages until he came to Humboldt Puddle's land. He examined it for a moment and then shook his head.
Well, it's not going to be easy, Colonel. I'm afraid he owned the land outright. There's no chance of acquiring it just by paying off the mortgage. Though you might be able to buy it from whoever inherits the land.
And who would that be? Do you know?
Oh, no, I don't know. For all I know, he may have died intestate, in which case the land will revert to the county. If it does, it'll be auctioned off, so you'll have a chance to buy it then.
I don't want to have to deal with an auction. I want to buy it now.
Well, as I said, as far as I can see, that's not... Oh, wait a minute. Here's something.
What?
You may remember how we were able to acquire the Babcock land by paying the taxes.
Yes. Will we be able to do the same thing with Puddle's ranch?
Perhaps. I see here that he hasn't yet paid the assessment for water improvement. That means there's an unsatisfied lien against the land. And just as you did with Babcock, if you pay the assessment, you can take possession of the land.
Where do I pay that?
Well, you would pay it at the assessor's office, but if I were you, I would just go across the street to the law office and see Robert Dempster. He could make certain everything is properly done so the land is transferred to you.
Merci, Monsieur Perkins. I will do so.
Attorney Dan Norton was speaking with Smoke Jensen in his office.
No problem. If Malcolm Puddle has a certified witness on hand, he can send you the power of attorney by telegraph. That will suffice for 30 days, which will give him time to send a certified power of attorney by mail.
Thanks, Dan.
It's a shame about Mr. Puddle getting killed. I didn't know him that well, but from what I did know of him, he was a decent man who tended to mind his own business.
That was Mr. Puddle, all right. Well, I better get the telegram sent off.
May I see the telegram, Mr. Puddle?
Certainly.
Malcolm Puddle was speaking to David Blanton, his lawyer. Blanton perused the telegram.
Regret, Uncle Humboldt Puddle killed. Stop. You inherit ranch, Big Rock, Colorado. Stop. Telegraph temporary power of attorney to me. Stop. I will pay $200 tax. Stop. Mail certified POA by 1 month. Stop. Please advise by return telegram. Stop. Kirby Jensen.
I haven't heard from my uncle in a long time, and I don't know if he's really dead or alive. And I don't know who this Kirby Jensen person is. What should I do?
Well, first, let's find out if your uncle really is dead, and if such a will exists. We can do that by telegraphing the court in Eagle County. We can also check on this man, Kirby Jensen, who sent you the telegram.
How soon do you think we'll hear back?
Oh, I expect we'll have the response within the hour. Why don't we go over to the telegraph office and send off a telegram? We can wait for the reply in Ned's bar.
They stopped at Western Union, and Blanton sent the telegram. Then they went to a local bar to await the response.
I hear it took Toby Gleason 2 months before he could talk again. He swears you hit him with a club.
I would have if I could have found one.
I don't blame you. He's a big, powerful man. So is Costacanti. And people are still talking about how you handled them.
Being big and strong means nothing if you don't know how to fight. And clearly neither of them knew how to fight. They've always depended on their strength to get their way.
About your inheritance.
If there is an inheritance?
Yes, if there is. Will you be going to Colorado?
Yeah, I think I will.
A few minutes later, the Western Union messenger came into the bar. He brought the telegram over and Malcolm tipped him, then opened the envelope.
Humboldt Puddle dead. Stop. Estate left to Malcolm Puddle. Stop. Tax due. Stop. Kirby Jensen, upstanding citizen. Stop. Monty Carson, Sheriff, Eagle County.
Malcolm showed the telegram to Blanton.
What do you think?
I think the whole thing is legitimate.
Malcolm smiled and stuck his hand across the table.
How would you like to shake hands with a genuine rancher?
What do you know about ranching?
That's where you raise cows, isn't it?
I assume so.
You think they raise cows to milk or for meat?
If I were you, I wouldn't ask that question once you get out there.
Smoke was in Longmont's saloon having a beer with Lewis when Sheriff Carson came in.
What have you got, Monty?
We've identified the three men who were killed out at Puddle's place.
Carson pulled out three wanted flyers and showed them to Smoke, one at a time.
$1,000 reward to be paid for Oliver Nixon, wanted for murder.
The other two wanted posters were exactly like the first, except the names were Pete Curtis and John Noble.
But there was nothing noble about either of them, I can tell you that. Back in Nebraska, John Noble killed an entire family, the mother and father and their two little ones. Anyway, it looks like you just earned yourself $3,000.
I only got two of them. Mr. Puddle got the other one.
Yeah, well, Puddle's dead, so you may as well take the money.
I'll tell you what. Puddle left everything to his nephew. Suppose we give the money to him. That is, if we can find him and he comes out here.
All right. Sounds fine to me. What in the world were they doing out at Cato de Bancada in the first place?
According to Mr. Puddle, they were working for Lucien Garneau.
I wouldn't doubt it. But even if we can prove they worked for him, it doesn't necessarily connect the murder to him. They could have been acting on their own. Every one of them has a record, and like I said, Noble once killed an entire ranch family.
A real nice guy.
I know Puddle didn't get along with Garneau. Could be he just assumed the men who attacked him were working for the Frenchman. Seems more likely they were just planning to rob him.
Rob him of what? I knew Puddle. He never had more than one beer when he came in here. He was always watching his money.
I don't know. Maybe to one of his horses. He did have a pretty good string of horses. Where are the horses now, by the way? Are they still at Puddle's ranch?
Yeah, I sent one of my men over to keep an eye on them.
Pearlie or Cal?
Neither one. They're both in Denver running my processing plant.
Ha! Knowing those two boys, I don't expect either one of them is very happy about that.
Well, there's no doubt they'd rather be back at Sugarloaf. But they are good men and do what needs to be done without much protest.
You're right about that. They're both good men. Tell me, Smoke, what do you think is going to happen to Puddle's ranch now?
I don't know. I guess that'll be up to Humboldt's nephew.
I wonder what kind of man he is.
If he's anything like his uncle, he'll be a good man.
You got a point there, my friend.
At that moment, the Western Union messenger came into the saloon and gave Smoke a message. Smoke tipped him and he left.
By this message, Malcolm Puddle transfers POA to Kirby Jensen, limited to paying taxes on Caro de Bancada Ranch, in name of Malcolm Puddle, stop. Notarized POA to follow, stop. Malcolm Puddle.
Good. I'm going to the clerk's office now to pay the taxes so the will can be probated.
Smoke left the saloon and stepped into the clerk's office a few minutes later, recognizing the very large man standing at the counter. Dempster was not a lawyer for whom Smoke had a lot of respect.
Mr. Pratt, I'm here to probate Humboldt Puddle's will. I have Malcolm Puddle's power of attorney to pay the taxes.
Oh, you're too late, Mr. Jensen. I'm here to pay the assessment on that property. And once I do, I will assume ownership.
Once you do? You mean you haven't paid the taxes yet?
I'm filling out the forms now.
Then it isn't too late.
Oh, but I'm afraid it is. I got here before you.
And how are you going to fill out those forms?
What do you mean, how am I going to fill out the forms? I'm just going to do it.
No, I mean, how are you going to write with a broken hand?
What's are you threatening me?
I wouldn't call it a threat. I would say it's more along the line of a promise.
I'll have you arrested and put in jail for this, and Pratt will be my witness.
Witness to what? I haven't seen anything.
You heard him threaten me.
Like I said, Mr. Dempster, I haven't seen anything.
What's it gonna be, Dempster? Are you gonna walk out of here with no bones broken? Or do we give Pratt here something to see so he won't testify for you?
You! I won't stand for this, do you hear me? I simply won't stand for it.
Has he given you the $200 yet?
No, he hasn't.
Smoke pulled $200 from his pocket and gave it to the clerk.
Here's the money. I'd say that puts me in front of him, wouldn't you?
Yes, sir. I would say that it does.
Seven days after Malcolm Puddle boarded the train in New York, it rolled into Big Rock, Colorado. His first matter of business was to meet with Dan Norton, the attorney he had communicated with via telegram while back in New York.
May I offer you a drink, Mr. Puddle?
I don't drink whiskey, but when we've completed our business, I would be glad to buy you a beer.
It's a deal. Now, Mr. Puddle, what can I do for you?
First, I would like to make certain my uncle's will has been probated, and that I am indeed the heir to his ranch. The Caro de Bancada, I believe it's called?
I assure you, Mr. Puddle, that you are the heir to your uncle's ranch, and the deed to the Caro de Bancada has already been transferred to your name. For it to be validated, however, you will have to show the tax clerk that Smoke did have your power of attorney to pay the taxes in your name.
I beg your pardon, Smoke? I gave no authority to anyone named Smoke.
I'm sorry. In all our communications with you, we referred to him as Kirby. Kirby Jensen. And indeed, that is his real name. But everyone who knows him calls him Smoke, even his wife.
I appreciate him doing that for me, and I should like to see him so I can repay the money. I've got the money right here. $200, I believe it was?
Yes, but you don't need to worry about reimbursing Smoke. That's already been taken care of.
I beg your pardon? How was it taken care of?
Norton opened the middle drawer of his desk and pulled out an envelope.
It's not only been taken care of, but you have $800 left over.
What? Mr. Norton, I assure you, sir, I have no idea what you're talking about. I've sent no money here, either by wire or post.
Perhaps you'd better let me explain. It seems that your uncle killed one of the men who went to the ranch to kill him. That man was a known outlaw, and there was a $1,000 reward posted for him, dead or alive. Since your uncle was unable to collect, I convinced the sheriff to allow me to hold the money in escrow for you.
Norton counted out eight $100 bills.
I certainly didn't expect this. And you say Mr. Jensen has already been paid back?
Yes. I'll tell you what kind of a man Smoke is. Three of the attackers were killed at Caro de Bancada. Smoke killed two and could have claimed all three since nobody was there to dispute him. But he said your uncle had killed one, and by rights, the money should go to you.
I can't wait to meet Mr. Jensen.
You will. He'll be your neighbor, and I'm sure that as a neighborly thing, he and Sally will invite you over for a meal. You haven't lived until you've tasted her cooking. We'll go see the clerk now, show him the power of attorney, and everything will be all squared away.
Thank you. You've been most helpful. I do hope to pay for your services.
We'll work something out.
They headed to the building on the corner of Center and Sykes Streets.
I'm not going to try and get all my money up front. I hope to make you a client so I can bleed you for a long time.
What?
I'm teasing. Merely teasing.
By the way, what does the name mean?
Smoke?
Well, that too. But I imagine Mr. Jensen will tell me that in due time. No, I'm talking about my uncle's... I mean, my ranch. If I'm going to be a ranch owner, I should at least know what Carro de Bancada means.
It means saddle. Here we are.
Don Pratt looked up when the two men came inside.
Hello, Mr. Norton.
Hello, Don. This is Malcolm Puddle.
I had a feeling you'd show up in person.
I have a notarized copy of the power of attorney to validate the one I sent by wire.
All right, let me see it, and I'll sign off on this, then turn the deed over to you.
What are you going to do with the ranch, Mr. Puddle?
I haven't decided yet. Why do you ask?
You will, no doubt, be visited by Lucien Garneau, or his agent, offering to buy you out.
What is the land worth?
It's 2,560 acres, and the last land transaction I dealt with was $5 an acre. Though in your case, it might be worth a little more because your uncle did a lot of work on the land. For example, he dug a canal from Frying Pan Creek to provide water. In addition to the land, your uncle has 325 head of prime Herefords. They're worth at least $35 a head. With land, cattle, and improvements to include house, barn, machine shed, and smokehouse, I would say the Carro de Bancada is worth somewhere in the neighborhood of $25,000.
That's a lot of money.
Garneau is a shrewd businessman, so no doubt if he makes an offer, he probably won't offer that much.
If he seriously wants it, he will.
Half an hour later, after taking Malcolm to the mercantile store to buy him some new Western clothing, Norton took him over to Longmont's saloon. There, Norton introduced him to Sheriff Monte Carson and Smoke Jensen.
Mr. Jensen, how nice to meet you, and to thank you in person for what you've done.
The name is Smoke. Your uncle was a good friend.
I can certainly see that he made friends, and for that I'm most grateful.
I see that you've taken a room here at the hotel, but if you'd like to ride out to your ranch, I'd be glad to take you there.
Ride out? What would I ride? I don't have a horse.
Yes, you do. I brought your uncle's riding horse into town. It's put up over at the livery.
Thank you. That was very thoughtful of you. Does my uncle have any employees? The reason I ask is because I was told there are 325 cattle there, and I'm concerned they haven't been looked after.
No, there aren't any full-time employees there. The cattle pretty much look after themselves until roundup time, or until you have to take them to market. Then Mr. Puddle would put on a couple of hands.
I see. Yes, I would like to ride out to the ranch.
All right. I'll take you out to see it. Then I want you to come over to my house for dinner tonight. You can even spend the night with us, and you can get an early start tomorrow to have a close look at Carro de Bancada.
Carro de Bancada. I'm a landowner, and not just a landowner. I actually own a ranch. I can't wait to tell all my friends back in Brooklyn. Are those my cattle?
Malcolm was looking out over a field they were riding by. Several cattle were grazing there.
No, those cows belong to the Frenchman.
The Frenchman?
That's what everyone calls him. He likes to call himself Colonel. Colonel Lucien Garneau.
He's the one who wants to buy the ranch, isn't he? Mr. Norton told me about him.
I expect he'll make an offer. He's bought out several ranchers already.
I take it Uncle Humboldt wasn't interested in selling to him?
No, he wasn't. Well, there it is. That's the gate into your place.
It had taken Smoke and Malcolm a little over a half an hour of leisurely riding to reach the ranch. The gate Smoke pointed out made an arch over the road. A sign hung from the top of the arch reading Carro de Bancada. Positioned on top of the arch was a saddle complete with hanging stirrups. From the arch, the road ran about a quarter mile up to the house, which was a rather modest, single-story dwelling.
The three other buildings beside the house are the barn, the machine shed, and a smokehouse. I know you have at least three or four cured hams in there and a couple of sides of bacon. And you've got a milk cow and a garden that's coming along fine.
That's good to know. I guess I'll have to learn how to cook.
Nothing to it. You just light a fire, then heat things up.
They dismounted in front of the house.
Where was my uncle killed?
He was over there, behind the corral fence. He put up quite a fight. There were four who came for him, and he held them all for quite a while.
Who were they?
Your uncle was certain they were working for the Frenchman. But of course, Garneau's denied any connection to it. Since there's no way of connecting the men to him, the official word is they were outlaws come to rob your uncle.
Do you believe that?
I don't know. One of them, a man named Noble, had a record of doing just that. Hitting remote ranches, killing everyone there, and then robbing them. It's possible, I guess.
But you think it was the Frenchman, don't you?
Your uncle thought that. Well, what do you say we go on over to the Sugarloaf now? I'm getting hungry, and my wife sure can cook.
Templeton had just entered the dining room at Long Trek, and he saw that Garneau had a large piece of paper spread out on the dining room table.
Come, I want you to see this.
A very detailed map had been drawn on newsprint he had gotten from the Big Rock Journal.
I wondered what you wanted with that big piece of paper.
Here is Sugarloaf, and here is Long Trek. Here is Caro de Bancada.
Yeah, Puddle's nephew has come to take it. But I'll bet you can buy him out cheap. He's some eastern dude who doesn't know a thing about ranching.
That may be true. But one thing I learned at Saint-Cyr is a good officer is always prepared for any contingency. Suppose he doesn't want to sell to me.
I don't think it would take much to convince him to sell.
I am told he has befriended Smoke Jensen.
Yeah, that's what I've heard as well.
Smoke Jensen is a formidable adversary. After all, he killed Willard, the three men who came to join us, the two men you set to ambush him, as well as Nixon, Curtis, and Noble.
He's just one man.
Just one man who has already dispatched nine men. Also, he is quite obviously a leader. What if he gathers the other Paysans into an organized resistance?
What would he have if he did do that? They're nothing but a bunch of pig farmers and small ranchers who couldn't fight their way out of a paper bag.
I studied your Civil War while I was at Saint-Cyr. Most of both armies were made up of farmers, ranchers, merchants, and mechanics. As Euripides once said, 10 men, wisely led, will beat 100 without a head. I wouldn't dismiss them so readily.
All right. So what should we do?
We are going to form an army. Turn out every man. I will speak with them.
Dressed in the uniform of a French colonel of cavalry, Garneau stood before every man who worked for him, cowboys and gunmen Templeton had recruited.
Starting today, I am doubling the salary of everyone who works for me. You will earn that money. You may be wondering about the clothes I am wearing. This is the uniform of a colonel of cavalry. I fought honorably in the Franco-Prussian War, and I am quite comfortable with command. You may look at me as your commanding officer, because starting today, we are going to become an army.
We're going to become what?
The speaker was a man named Curly Roper.
An army. And an army demands discipline. Let us begin by lining up in formation. Capitaine Templeton, you will be my second in command.
Yes, sir.
Briggs, Mathis, Carr, you three will be my sergeants. The rest of you men will take your orders from them as they will take their orders from me. I'm trying to build something here. Something grand and unique. I'm building a cattle empire. And like any empire, we have made enemies, and no doubt we will make more enemies in the future. In addition, this is not the kind of empire that can survive merely by staying in place. We must grow, and the only way we can grow is if we convince the small ranchers in the valley to sell out to me. Quite frankly, gentlemen, we must convince them to sell at a price that is right for me. That is going to take some persuasion, the kind of persuasion that must be backed by use of arms if necessary.
Colonel, it sounds to me like you're talking about a war here. I didn't sign on to go to war. If I wanted to do that, I'd join the army and go fight the Injuns.
Roper, do you know how much a private makes in the army?
I ain't got no idea.
Sir!
What?
When you speak to Captain Templeton or to me, you will say, sir.
Thank you, Colonel. Miller, For your information, a private in the Army makes $13 a month. Most cowboys work for $20 a month and found. Because of the colonel's generous raise today, you will be getting $60 a month. You don't have to pay for where you sleep at night, and you don't have to pay for your food. That means you have $60 you can use any way you want. You'll be making 4.5 times more money working for Long Trek than you would make in the Army. Do you really want to go join the Army?
Hell no!
Over the next several days, the ranch was alive with the sound of repeated gunfire, the echoes rolling back from the nearby mountains to double the intensity. Someone not aware of what it was might have thought a battle was taking place, when in fact it was nothing of the sort. Templeton stood beside Garneau as they watched their army train. The Frenchman had organized his men into 3 squads of 9, plus the sergeants he had put in command of each squad. Briggs, Mathis, and Carr were skilled gunmen, and they were conducting shooting exercises for the other men.
How do you think they are doing?
Some are doing better than others.
Yes, that is always the case when an army is trained.
Colonel, I have a suggestion. That is, if you'd care to hear it.
I would be a poor commander, indeed, if I refused to listen to a suggestion from my second in command.
Jensen has 2 men who work for him, and one of them is almost as good with a gun as Jensen is. Fact is, he used to be a gunman himself. The other one isn't quite as good, but he's good enough that if they join Jensen, it could cause us some trouble. I think we should take care of them before we start anything.
Who are these men?
Pearly and Cal Wood.
Why haven't I heard of them? I've been here for over 6 months, and I've never heard of either one of them. Shouldn't I have heard of them by now?
They've spent near on to a year now in Denver. It seems Jensen has started a slaughterhouse there, and Pearly and Cal are running it.
If they are in Denver, then they are of no concern to us.
No, sir, that's not quite true. If they ever get the idea Jensen is in trouble, they'll be back here faster than a duck can jump on a June bug.
How do you propose to take care of them?
I think we should send someone to Denver.
Who do you suggest? If they are as good as you say they are, I don't think any of our men would be a match for them. Except, possibly, Mathis, Briggs, or Carl. And I don't want to send them right now. They are too valuable in training the others.
If we put out a reward on Jensen's men, we won't have to send any of our men. Someone out there will do it for us.
How much of a reward do you think I should post?
$1,000 ought to do it.
And how am I to do this? I can't very well go to the newspaper office and have them print up reward posters for me.
We won't need to. All we have to do is put out the word. It'll spread all over, believe me.
Very well. Put out the word that I will pay $1,000 to anyone who kills Cal Wood and Pearly... Pearly what? What is his last name?
I don't know.
I can't put out a reward on someone if I don't know who we are looking for, can I?
Let me ask you this, Colonel. How many men do you think are named Pearly? If you've got no objection to it, I'll start putting out the word.
By all means, put out the word.
Long Trek wasn't the only spot where training was taking place. It was going on at Sugarloaf as well, though there were only 3 people participating in the exercise compared to the 32 men undergoing military instruction at Long Trek. Smoke and Sally were the trainers. Malcolm Puddle was the one being trained. Smoke handed Malcolm a loaded pistol, then pointed to one of the several tin cans sitting on a fence.
See if you can hit that can.
Malcolm raised the pistol, closed one eye, and squinted down the barrel.
Don't raise your pistol to eye level and try to aim at it. In a fight, you don't have time to do that.
How am I supposed to aim if I don't sight down the barrel?
Do it kinesthetically.
I beg your pardon, do it how?
You're a boxer, right?
Yes.
When you throw a punch, do you raise your fist to your eyes and aim it?
No.
What do you do?
Well, I just sort of feel where the... Oh, I think I see what you're talking about. You're saying I should just sense where I'm shooting.
Yes.
But that's not the same thing as hitting someone with your fists.
Sure it is. It turns out that I've been shooting kinesthetically all along. but I didn't know it until Sally told me that's what I was doing.
But you can really hit something that way?
Watch.
Sally nodded at Smoke, and he turned his back. She picked up two bottles and gave one to Malcolm while keeping the other. Then, silently, she indicated to Malcolm he should toss the bottle into the air. They launched both bottles at the same time. Faster than Malcolm could have believed possible, Smoke whirled around, drawing his pistol as he did so.
My! Kinesthetically.
Does that answer our question as to whether you can actually hit anything that way?
Lord, if everyone out here can shoot like that, I would be an idiot to actually get into a gunfight with anyone.
Trust me, not everyone can shoot like my Smoke.
Try it yourself, Malcolm.
The tin can stayed in place.
It's not hard.
Sally fired from her waist, knocking one of the tin cans off the fence.
I thought you said everyone couldn't shoot like that.
Sally's just showing off. But she's a better shot than 99% of the people you'll meet out here.
I thought you told me that you were from Boston.
I am.
Well, I know you didn't learn to shoot like that in Boston.
I didn't. I came out here to teach school. I didn't learn to shoot like that until Smoke taught me.
You taught her?
I did.
You must be a good teacher. Maybe there is hope for me.
Malcolm missed again.
Maybe. But don't count on it.
Smoke, don't talk like that. You know I couldn't hit anything when you first started teaching me. And I'm not the only one. Look at Matt. He's as good as you.
Maybe better.
Who's Matt?
Matt Jensen is a young man Smoke raised.
Here. Reload and fire again.
Are you sure I'm not just wasting your ammunition?
It's not exactly a waste. Even though you aren't hitting anything yet, you're getting a feel for the gun. And that's important.
Malcolm emptied the pistol two more times. Then, after reloading, he hit one of the cans with his first shot.
I hit it!
Can you do it again?
I don't know. That may have just been luck.
No, it wasn't luck. Look at the can. Then feel the pistol lining up with it.
Kinesthetically.
Malcolm stared at the can, then felt the pistol lining up with it. The can flew off the post.
Lord, I can't believe it!
He shot four more times, hitting two more cans.
I'm beginning to get the feel for this now.
Now don't lose the feel. We'll do some more shooting tomorrow.
Jack Emerson was at Nippy Jones's saloon, having a drink with Bud Lane. Lane told him something he had just learned.
I know someone who'll pay $1,000 to anyone who can do a certain job for him.
$1,000? Well, that's a lot of money.
I reckon it is, but I ain't about to try and collect it. In the first place, it's blood money.
What you mean, blood money?
Just what I'm saying. There's two men here in Denver this feller wants dead.
Who is it? And who is wanting them dead?
The two men the feller's wanting killed is named Pearly and Cal. They're working over at the abattoir, running it for Smoke Jensen. And as far as who it is that's wanting them killed, it's Deacus Templeton.
Deacus Templeton?
Yeah.
You know him?
Yeah, I know him. Me and him pulled a job together once. We held up a stagecoach up in Wyoming. Got $2,500.
Can this Templeton be trusted to pay off?
Well, yeah, I reckon it can. But Jack, don't tell me you're actually thinking about doing it.
$1,000 is a lot of money. If I could be sure this Templeton person would actually pay off.
Well, I'll tell you this. I know where to find him. I expect you could persuade him to pay off, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Armed with the information about the reward money being paid to anyone who killed a couple of men named Pearly and Cal Wood, Emerson contacted Nelson Battle, and they met in the same saloon.
Well, who wants them dead and why?
I'm told it's a man named Deacus Templeton who wants them dead. I don't know why and I don't care. All I know is he's paying $1,000 for it.
$1,000? That's good money.
You're damn right it's good money.
You know this man Templeton? Can he be trusted?
I don't know him, but I know Bud Lane and I trust him. He knows Templeton and says he'll pay off.
These two men were supposed to kill. You know how to find them?
Not hard to find them. They're right in Denver, running the Jensen Abattoir.
How are we gonna do it? Got any ideas?
Oh, yeah. I've got it all planned out. We're gonna go see him and let on like we're cattlemen. We want to run some of our cows through there. We'll invite them out to supper. Then, when they don't suspect anything, we kill them.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Be the easiest $500 I ever did made.
The abattoir was easy to find. It was adjacent to a big railroad marshaling yard, and at least 5,000 cattle were penned up outside the buildings that made up the complex. In front of the building, Emerson approached a man in a long white coat spotted with blood.
I'm looking for two men, Pearly and Cal. Could you tell me where I might find them?
Pearly and Cal, you'll find them both back there, just inside.
The man pointed to a door at the back of the building. Emerson and Battle walked toward it.
I thought this Pearly feller was supposed to be a gunman. Ain't neither one of them even wearing a gun.
We'll try and keep him that way.
Pearly, we've been here for over 6 months now. How long we have to stay here and watch over this business?
Smoke said we wouldn't be here forever, just until the operation's going smooth. Then he'll hire someone to manage it. He wants us here until everything's going well, and I figure we owe him that much, don't you?
Yeah, I guess so. But I'm not telling you this. This place is beginning to give me the willies.
What you mean, give you the willies, Cal?
Well, think about it. What have we done our whole lives but take care of cows? We feed them, we make sure they have water, we keep the wolves and big cats away from them, we protect them. And now, what are we doing? We're leading them down the long chute to slaughter. And because we took care of them for their entire lives, they trust us. They go along thinking everything will be just fine, then BAM! We kill them! It just don't seem right to me, is all. It's like we're double-crossing them or something. I can see it in their eyes.
You eat steak, don't you? Roast beef?
Yeah, I eat it.
Where you think it comes from?
I know where it comes from. It comes from cows.
Cows that we've taken care of for all their lives?
Yeah, well, if you put it like that, I guess you're right. It still gives me the willies, killing them like that. I mean, when they're so trusting and all.
Wonder what these fellas want.
Pearly was looking at two men who were approaching.
Yes, sir. We help you gentlemen?
We were told you two men are in charge here.
That's right.
We're cattlemen from up in Wyoming. Always before, we've shipped our cattle back to the Eastern Market while they're still on the hook. But I've been told the best way to do it now is to get them processed here first.
Yes, sir. That is the absolute truth of it. But doing it this way brings you about 10% higher profit.
My name is Emerson. This is Battle. I wonder if we could buy you two gentlemen supper tonight and talk about bringing our cattle here.
But you don't have to buy us supper just to do business with us.
But you're welcome to.
Good. Suppose we meet you at Little Man's Restaurant at 9 o'clock tonight.
9 o'clock? Ain't that awful late to be eating supper?
Unfortunately, that's the earliest we can do it. I'm afraid we have some other business to take care of first.
You sure you want to meet us at Little Man's? That's way on the other side of the marshaling yard. I know a lot of the yard workers take their breakfast and lunch there, but I've never known anyone to eat supper there. I'm not sure it's even open for supper.
Oh, yeah, it's open. We've eaten there several times since we came down here. They set a fine supper table.
All right, Little Man's at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
Because they were staying in Denver for an extended period of time, Pearly and Cal had rented a small house. That evening, both men took a bath, then got dressed in what Cal called their business suit.
Ow! This is another thing I don't like about being here. We have to get all dressed up like some sort of dandies. Why couldn't we just wear regular clothes?
These are regular clothes for businessmen.
Yeah, well, I ain't a businessman. I'm a cowboy! What I want to know is why this business of eating supper is so late. Who eats supper when it's so dark out you can't see 10 feet in front of you?
I think the high-tone people eat their supper real late. Only they don't call it supper. They call it dinner.
Dinner is what you have in the middle of the day.
You ready to go?
Ready? I'm starving to death here and you ask me if I'm ready to go.
The two men reached the front door. Then Pearly stopped and stretched out his hand to stop Cal.
That, hold it.
What?
I don't know. got a funny feeling about this.
I got a funny feeling, too, and only it's a big hollow space in the pit of my stomach. It's called being hungry.
Wait a minute.
Pearly started back toward his bedroom.
Where are you going? To get my gun. I think you should get yours, too.
Why?
Just do it, Cal. I told you, I got a funny feeling. I can't explain it, but I don't like it. I don't like it one bit.
All right. You're the old man here. If you got a feeling, who am I to argue with you?
Little Man's was about a half a mile from their cabin, on the other side of a large crisscrossing network of tracks. It was not convenient to ride horses over this ground. The elevated tracks, the rails, and even the gravel and ballast could injure a horse in the middle of the night.
Damn, it's dark out here.
Yeah, it is.
Pearly, you know that funny feeling you had?
Yeah.
Well, I've got it too. What do you say we just turn around and go back toward town?
Well, I thought you were hungry.
I am hungry. But we can stop at the first cafe we see.
Just then, a train engine passed them. The headlamp threw a beam ahead, and in the beam, they could see for just a moment the little building that housed Little Man's restaurant. Then the train came between them and the building, so until all the cars passed, they could see nothing.
Did you see the restaurant building?
Yeah, I saw it.
Didn't look like it had any lights on.
No, it didn't.
There's something funny about this, Pearly, like you said, and I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
The train cleared then.
Get down! Ready?
Pearly and Cal leaped over to the opposite side of the railroad track, getting down behind the berm.
Who's shooting at us?
I have a pretty good idea who. What I don't know is why.
Emerson! Is that you?
Oh, you figured that out, did you?
What do you want? You plan on robbing us? Just how much money you think people like us would be carrying anyway?
It isn't what you're carrying. It's what you're worth to us dead. $1,000.
What are you talking about? Neither of us is worth a cent. There ain't no paper out on us. You aren't going to collect a cent from the law.
Oh, it ain't the law that's paying.
What? Who's paying?
What does that matter to you? You'll be dead.
What makes you think we'll be dead?
Because Battle and I are going to kill you. I'll just bet you didn't bring your pistols with you, did you? I mean, going to a nice business supper and all, why would you?
Yeah, we did. We brought our guns.
Uh-huh. Oh, I'm sure you did. I'll tell you what. Just to show you what kind of men we are, we'll kill both of you real quick. You won't feel a thing.
A second train came by then, and once again, Pearly and Cal were separated from Emerson and Battle by the passing of a long line of freight cars.
Cal, let's jump on the train!
Good idea!
They ran alongside the moving cars until they matched its speed. Pearly jumped in through the open side door of one of the boxcars. Then, reaching down to grab Cal's hand, he pulled him in.
Thanks.
Battle, come on! I've just seen him jump onto this train!
Moving quickly, Emerson and Battle jumped onto the train and climbed to the top. That way, they'd be able to see when Pearly and Cal jumped off the train. They squatted down and waited as the train proceeded some distance, then stopped, preparatory to backing the assembled cars onto a side track.
Let's get out of here!
Pearly and Cal jumped down from the train.
Where do you reckon they are now?
Half a mile away by now.
Where you hit?
In the arm!
Pearly saw the muzzle flash coming from the top of one of the boxcars. When the flash receded, he saw two men standing there.
There they are!
Yeah, I see them!
Pearly raised his gun.
Oh, you got them both!
Pearly went to check on the men, then ran back to Cal.
How bad you get hit?
Oh, I think it's more of a crease than anything. I felt around, I don't feel a hole in my arm. Are they dead?
Yeah, both of them.
Ugh. Who do you think wanted us dead? Why?
Cal, my friend, I don't have the slightest idea.
Mount Malcolm was pumping water when two men came riding up toward him. He recognized one of them as Garneau, but he had never seen the other one. Although their presence made him a bit nervous, especially as he wasn't wearing his pistol, he smiled at him in order to maintain his composure.
Hello, gentlemen. Colonel Garneau. And I'm sorry, sir, but I've never had the pleasure of meeting you.
The name is Templeton. Deacus Templeton.
Well, climb down from your horses. I'm about to make some lemonade. Why don't you come in out of the sun?
Garneau and Templeton followed Malcolm to the house. It still reflected Humboldt Puddle's personality. Hung on the wall were the unit flag of the 1st Sharpshooter Regiment, to which Puddle belonged, framed photographs of his parents, who were Malcolm's grandparents, and antlers and game heads he had taken in hunts. A dining table and chairs Humboldt had built with his own hands still sat in the kitchen. Malcolm had squeezed the lemon and mixed it with sugar earlier. He added the cool water and stirred it, and the lemonade was done. He poured 3 glasses, then gave a glass to each of his visitors.
Merci.
Vous êtes les bienvenus.
Ah, parlez-vous français?
Yes, I speak French. I found that in my old job as shipping clerk, and in dealing with shipments to foreign countries, learning other languages was beneficial to my work.
I'm impressed. Did you enjoy the work you are doing, working as a shipping clerk?
Not particularly.
Monsieur Puddle, how would you like to return to New York with enough money that you could live quite comfortably for several years? You wouldn't have to return to a job that, by your own admission, you don't particularly like.
And how would I do that?
By selling your ranch to me.
How much would you offer?
$35,000.
$35,000?
It is a very generous offer.
It's more than generous.
Then you accept the offer?
Malcolm thought about it for a moment, remembering Smoke had told him the other ranchers were holding out because his Uncle Humboldt had held out. But he also knew some of the ranchers who had sold or been forced off their land wound up getting much less than their properties were worth.
Did you offer my uncle this much money?
The offer I made to your uncle was quite generous.
And he refused?
Yes. He believed he had some obligation to his neighbors. You, of course, having but recently arrived in the valley, have no such obligation. And because the amount I am offering you is generous, very generous, I'm sure you are intelligent enough to accept.
Give me 24 hours to consider it.
24 hours? Why would you need 24 hours? Do you not understand that what I've just offered you is much more than this miserable piece of land is worth?
Anything of value is worth exactly what someone is willing to pay for it. The fact that you are offering me $35,000 means this land is worth $35,000. If it's worth that to you, it's worth that to me.
Don't be foolish. If you think by holding out on me I will raise the offer, you are sadly mistaken. Others have made the same mistake, only to ultimately sell to me for much less than my original offer.
As I said, give me 24 hours to consider it.
Very well. I will give you until exactly this time tomorrow. If you have not made a decision by then, the offer will be withdrawn. Do you understand the consequences of that, Mr. Puddle? It means that you will be losing $35,000.
No, I'd be losing only $10,000. I can easily get $25,000 from anyone. And that's $25,000 more than I had last month.
24 hours, Mr. Puddle. Not 1 minute longer.
I understand.
I'm not sure that you do.